Journalism Institute at the Missouri School of Journalism. Welcome to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. Today we're going to shine a light on one of the most closed countries in the world. Most people outside of Central Asia know little about the gas-rich desert nation of Turkmenistan. The former Soviet Republic has virtually no independent media and just a handful of bookstores. Foreign journalists and scholars are rarely granted visas to visit. Even tourists who go to the country can visit only with a government-approved guide accompanying them. Turkmenistan has had just two presidents since the fall of the Soviet Union. Both have built bizarre North Korea-style personality cults and adorned the capital, Ashgabat, with giant golden statues of themselves. The incumbent, Gurbanguly Berdimuhamedov, has been in power since 2006, but he's up for re-election February 12 in what will be the country's first multi-party elections in its 26-year history. Many say the polls will be hardly democratic, but the election comes as Turkmenistan is facing new economic pressure as the price of its main export, natural gas, has tumbled in recent years. On today's edition of Global Journalist, a look at Turkmenistan in the final days of its presidential campaign. We've got some excellent guests to talk about this isolated country today. Up first is Victoria Clement in Washington, D.C. She's a research scholar at the Wilson Center who has lived in Turkmenistan and is working on a book about the country. Victoria, welcome to Global Journalist.
Thank you, Jason.
Well, Turkmenistan is fairly isolated. You did live there for a time. Tell us, just as an outsider, what struck you about the country during your first visits there?
Well, it is a quiet and fairly closed country. There are only about 5 million people living there. It's very sparsely populated. But as you say, it is it does have a wealth of hydrocarbons. So the people do have subsidies that enrich their lives and create a kind of relationship with the government that makes them, enjoy the status quo, which they'll be, I believe, voting for in this upcoming election that you mentioned.
So in other words, things like food, water, healthcare, all that is subsidized heavily by the government.
Yes. Oil, gas, electricity, water.
Well, we talked a bit about Turkmenistan's last two presidents building personality cults about themselves. How is that visible on the ground in people's everyday lives?
Well, as you mentioned, there are statues around the city. Some of the statues that the former president erected have been moved from the most central locations by the second president, Berdimuhamedov. Nevertheless, they still stand. And Berdimuhamedov has himself or his supporters have erected a statue to him in the main part of the city. In addition to that, there are portraits of the second president throughout the classrooms and official offices. So his image is omnipresent and ubiquitous.
And within Turkmenistan, how easy is it to get information about the outside world? How easy is it for you to communicate with people there about things like the upcoming election?
Well, it is possible to communicate with people both via telephone and email. They do have some internet access. But I will say that people do engage in a fair amount of self-censorship. And even when I speak to people, I am careful when I ask them about things like the upcoming election to avoid anything that could possibly get them in trouble, because the communications, especially with the outside world, are most likely monitored.
And this is a place that was under Soviet rule for decades. Then for the last quarter century, it's been independent, but it's had this sort of rigidly controlled authoritarian government. From what you were able to gather, how do people there think about things like democracy and human rights?
I'm not so sure that democracy in the way that we think of it is something that is at the forefront of people's minds in Turkmenistan. They're probably more focused, like most people around the world, on basic everyday needs like good employment and good education for their children. There is no real movement for democracy and very little evidence of a civil society in Turkmenistan.
Well, Our next question actually came from a Twitter user. Talk to us about the outlook of younger people in Turkmenistan. Now, obviously, the world has changed dramatically since the Soviet era. And just a couple years ago, we saw young people all across the Middle East sort of in the streets starting revolutions. Do younger people in Turkmenistan, do they sort of buy into this sort of strict authoritarian system, or is there some dissatisfaction there?
There is enough dissatisfaction that you do have people, young people, traveling abroad for study. So, for example, there are estimates of more than 40,000 students studying in other countries. But for those who live in the country, there is a great deal of evidence that as I said, the status quo is something that is accepted and will persist. There is a very quiet attitude in Turkmenistan toward the government and the controls on the society.
And we had another Twitter user ask us about the rights of women in Turkmenistan. Obviously, Turkmenistan is a Muslim country. It does have a Soviet past. How are the rights of women? How have they changed over time?
Well, at the beginning of the 20th century, for example, we saw women starting to enter the education system, and that increased exponentially during the Soviet years, so that you see parity between men and women, boys and girls, in education and the workplace in Turkmenistan, and that does have something to do with the Soviet legacy. But there's still a great deal of room for equality between the genders.
And this is going to be Turkmenistan's first multi-party elections. Why do you think the government has chosen to go forward with allowing opposition parties to run in this upcoming poll?
Well, we can't really call them opposition parties. And it's not the first multi-party election. There were others that Berdimuhamedov ran in earlier years where there were other candidates.
All those candidates were from his own party, though, weren't they?
Yeah, okay, yes. So there are other candidates, other parties running now, but they're not opposition candidates. They are people in the sense that we would think of these are people who have been handpicked by the regime, who don't pose a real threat to Berdimuhamedov. And the reason I believe that they're going through the motions of this election is in part so that Berdimuhamedov can claim legitimacy and claim a popular mandate, both for internal consumption and external consumption.
Victoria Clement, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
A reminder that you're listening to Global Journalist. We're talking today about Turkmenistan, which will hold its first multi-party elections in its 26-year history this month. To expand our discussion, we're going to bring in three other people who follow events in Turkmenistan closely. Joining us from Washington, D.C. is Mohammed Tahir of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. He's originally from Turkmenistan and hosts the network's Majlis podcast about Central Asia. In Charlotte, North Carolina, we're joined by Stephen Sable, a history professor at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte, who has researched Turkmenistan for years. And in Glasgow, Scotland, is Luca Anceschi. He's a lecturer in Central Asian Studies at the University of Glasgow. Welcome to all of you. Let me start first with you, Luca Anceschi. How has Turkmenistan changed over the past 9 years under President Berdimuhamedov? Give us just sort of a picture.
For the worse. The country has not undergone any substantial change in terms of political processes. There is no liberalization. The economy is still very much state-controlled. And in fact, if the most significant change is that we're now registering the total failure of the energy policy of the regime. Gas is the main export. But at the moment, the situation in which the policy has evolved led Turkmenistan to exporting only to China, which is problematic because we know that the system of loans that regulated the deal that was done with China, in fact, is bringing less and less money in.
Okay, so I'm sorry. So you were saying that previously Turkmenistan had exported gas to a couple of other countries. I think it's Russia and Iran, but it lost those as customers. So it's become dependent on China essentially to buy its main export that funds much of its government, much of its services. Is that fair?
That is correct. In January 2016, Gazprom withdrew from the Central Asian market, and later in December 2016, so last month, Turkmenistan and Iran decided to interrupt the bilateral trade gas deal, which really leaves China as the only customer.
Well, let me back up here just a moment, because I think we want to come back to this issue about Chinese influence in Turkmenistan. But let me turn it to you, Stephen Sable. You know, one of the things that Turkmenistan is known for is this sort of cult of personality, which I think got so much attention during the rule of its first president, Saparmurat Niyazov. He's the guy who was named president for life. He officially changed the names of the months after himself and his mother. How did his rule sort of shape the country that Turkmenistan is today?
Well, it created both the political and socioeconomic climate that the current regime has, although made some changes, it's nonetheless continued just with different actors, different characters involved. It put Turkmenistan really on the path of isolation, even though they call it positive neutrality. It really doesn't have many friends in the world, and it's quite dependent on its neighbors or regional actors. So Niyazov, unfortunately, set Turkmenistan on this path of isolation, which he heralded as a virtue, but I think most observers would agree that it's created such an isolated, lonely state that without the goodwill of neighbors or other actors in the region, Turkmenistan has struggled mightily since independence.
And Mohammad Tahir, give us just an overview of the media environment there now. We are just days away from a presidential election. What does the news look like in Turkmenistan?
Oh, news is the same, like the state media is functioning the way it's supposed to function. That is to, explain the state policy and praise the President Berdimuhamedov in his election campaign. The other candidates, who nine of them actually these days, rarely gets any attention by the media. And so basically that's kind of a propaganda, platform for the state. So then what you left with is just a few outside organizations to get information, like objective information, that one of them being the Turkmen Service of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Actually, that's the only media which broadcasts to Turkmenistan in Turkmen language. With regular information coming out from inside of the country. So as election gets closer, as Turkmenistan is facing enormous economic challenges, So our people are facing kind of consequences of that in a way that they are pressured kind of blocked in their...
Yeah, I mean, how do your reporters for Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Mohammed, how do they operate inside the country?
They are operating like kind of freelance reporters without accreditation, and that's because we requested a number of occasions to get them accreditation. The authorities won't respond. And also, we asked for accreditation of our bureau. They would not respond to that question either. So they are kind of working on their own, providing information from inside. Actually, they are the only one doing that with enormous risks. Every time they file a report which could be potentially critical of someone in the position of authority, they are questioned, they are intimidated, they are harassed. And as I speak today, two of them are in jail. One is from last 1.5 years. The other was just detained last December. We believe just because of their reporting. Obviously, they have lots of other allegations, but the main reason being that. So the other who are working now, three of them at the moment, and they are doing their job with enormous challenges.
And before we get too far, I should say that we did invite representatives of the Turkmen Foreign Ministry and the Turkmen Embassy in the United States on the show. Unfortunately, they did not respond to our request. But let me turn this back to you, Luka Ancheski, because what Mohammed has been describing, what Steve is describing, it makes it sound like Turkmenistan is almost kind of like a North Korea of Central Asia in some ways. Is that a fair comparison?
Well, it is in terms of the isolation. Obviously, the geopolitical circumstances when North Korea finds itself with two great powers very close are different from Turkmenistan. But if you just merely talk about the isolation, yes, it is true. The fact that Turkmenistan and isolation is self-imposed, the policy of neutrality that they have been implementing in 1995 has been used to insulate the country from foreign influences so that whoever tries to engage with them cannot bring any price tag to cooperation office, which leaves the regime free hands with whatever kind of issue they have. So it is a country that's essentially isolated. There are serious constraints to the internal and external mobility of the citizens. There are also problems with the access of foreigners. Last year, I think 2015, maximum of 1,000 visas was issued worldwide. So it's a country where people do not simply go through.
Worldwide, only 1,000 people visited the country last year then. That's a couple, three people a day.
Well, and most of them were either businessmen or foreign diplomats or returning Turkmens who were visiting families in the country.
Right.
So it's not a country that's got access to ideas coming from the outside.
Well, let me turn this back to you, Stephen Sable, because Turkmenistan was a part of the Soviet Union. Russian was an official language, but it seems like Turkmenistan has really sought to keep Russia at arm's length. How has that played out? Why has that been such a focus of Turkmen policy?
Well, one of the reasons I would argue is has to do with the economics. Being essentially a landlocked country, it's going to be heavily dependent upon its neighbors. And so you have a situation where if you're talking about the exportation of the natural gas, for example, and other commodities out of the country, it's typically utilized bilateral arrangements to try and accomplish this. Russia is going to negotiate any sort of contracts or agreements with Turkmenistan that actually favor Russia and might actually diminish Turkmenistan's opportunities. But I think also that when the Soviet Union collapsed, one of the things that many of the republics in Central Asia tried to do was to find mechanisms for legitimacy. The system, the Soviet system, the history, the culture, the concepts behind the Soviet system had essentially evaporated, and so the regime attempts to then create a legitimacy for Turkmenistan. And so by keeping Russia at bay, you manage to create this system by which the Turkmen state becomes now the legitimate actor for people in their lives, the economy, sort of the socio-cultural construction of Turkmenistan. And in many respects, though, I would argue, and listening to both Luka and Mohammed talk about this, there's almost been a continuation of the totalitarian sort of system where people live what I would call two lives, as they did during the Soviet period. There's their public life and their private life. And you heard Victoria talk about this. The private life is where you might be able to get information. But in public, people are very cautious about the way in which they interact with the state and the way in which they interact with any visitors to the country.
A reminder that you're tuned in to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. We're talking today about the isolated Central Asian nation of Turkmenistan. We're joined by Mohammed Tahir of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Stephen Sable of the University of North Carolina, Charlotte, and Luka Ancheski of the University of Glasgow in Scotland. For more Global Journalists, you can visit our website, globaljournalist.org. There you'll find our ongoing coverage of underreported international issues, including a new series of interviews with journalists exiled from their home countries. You can also check out Global Journalist on Facebook or Twitter, or subscribe to the videocast of this program on YouTube. And Mohammed Tahir, I wanted to ask you about a fairly well-known episode about the current Turkmen President Berdimuhamedov, and that took place back in 2013. I understand he's a lover of horses, and he was in this big horse race in Turkmenistan with a large crowd there. And at the end of the horse race, he fell off his horse. How was that event covered? What does that sort of tell us about Turkmenistan? What happened after that?
You know, we after that event, we were trying to actually provide as much as possible the objective reflection of what happened. So that was a part of a major event in Ashgabat, and he loves to host an organization like that. And also, you mentioned that he loves horse. He's seen riding horse in a number of occasions. So that was, I believe, was one of the occasions where he could demonstrate his expertise on that subject. So he was doing that, and that was a kind of horse race, and almost close to the finish line, his horse stumbles and he falls down. And then yes, there were lots of people, and on that occasion, yes, that was a live broadcast which stops on the Turkmen State TV. Then there were lots of other people who were, shooting that event. And then, so authorities were kind of very sensitive about this particular event being broadcasted or published outside the media. So when event finishes, so they stops everyone who were present in the stadium, checks their cell phones and camera and all these things to be able to prevent this picture being leaked. But, there were some people.
So they were trying to make sure that people didn't take video or didn't still have video of the president falling off his horse on their smartphones.
Yes. So I remember people who supposed to, depart to various countries immediately after that event, they missed their flight because they were under investigation or under, they were questioned, stopped and questioned by the security. So that is one of those paranoid situations that they want to portray. The president is just, is a man who is above the ordinary people. He has lots of skills. So, and you see, that's why lots of other activities that is shown on TV, him doing like a sports car race or biking or some other stuff in whatever activity that he participates in, he's always announced as a winner. So this is part of that. So you see that occasionally in a number of other occasions.
Well, I think that anecdote is quite illustrative, but let me sort of change gears here and go to you, Luka Ancheski. There has been growing concern about the spread of ISIS in Afghanistan, which of course shares a border with Turkmenistan, especially in the provinces near Turkmenistan. Is this seen as a threat? I mean, how is the war in Afghanistan, how has that affected Turkmenistan?
Well, the post-2014 situation is actually affected because there have been continuous skirmishes at the border between Turkmenistan and Afghanistan. I don't think it's ISIS related. I don't think there is a problem of radicalization. I think there is a problem of relationship between Turkmenistan and the Taliban who run that area. I mean, traditionally, the two counterparts have had good relationships. There are pictures of former foreign minister shaking the hands of the Taliban leaders. We know that there were deals of smuggling going on through the Niyazov years. But the deterioration of the border situation actually signifies to me that the current government is struggling to having a successful relationship with the Taliban. I wouldn't really mention radicalism as an issue here. It's much more about territory and power.
Well, Stephen Sable, in one of your articles, you wrote that Turkmenistan is flawed, fragile, and isolated. And the flawed and isolated parts of that title seem obvious, but what signs are there that this regime is fragile?
When I wrote that article, it was actually before Niyazov passed away. And my concern in Turkmenistan, and it's still a concern that I have for Turkmenistan, is there are really weak succession mechanisms in the event that a president leaves office, whether due to death or some other reason. And as a consequence, given Niyazov's health issues before he died, my concern was that in the event that he left the scene, that other actors in the neighborhood, Russia, Iran, certainly, and I also thought Uzbekistan, would find mechanisms to actively intervene in Turkmenistan's politics during the succession crisis that I expected could occur.
So you don't see it as being fragile right now, then?
Well, I think it's fragile in its continued isolation, and it's difficult to gauge social dissatisfaction, public dissatisfaction. We get snippets. Mohammed does some wonderful reporting out of Turkmenistan, and as Victoria was saying, you do get some information from people, but they're always very, very cautious. So it's difficult to measure the depth of support for the regime or what might come next in the event that the current regime falls. And I still believe, although again difficult to measure, that Iran would potentially have some interests in a
I'm sorry, we're losing your audio there, Steve, but I did want to go to you, Mohammed Tahir. Our time does grow short. Corruption is supposed to be a big problem in Turkmenistan. How does that play out in people's everyday lives? How does it affect them?
Oh, you face them in every stage of your life and day-to-day life in Turkmenistan. For instance, if you want to admit your kid to kindergarten, it starts from there. So you have to be able to make some people happy there to be able to get your kid in. Then it goes to school.
So you have to pay bribes just to enroll your child in kindergarten.
Sure. And then when it goes to elementary school, the amount again increases. High school, it goes up to all the way to the university, where in the past we have heard a really, really big number, big amount of money to be able to get not only to university, which supposedly free, and then you have to continue to bribe teachers to be able to get good grade or just pass your exams. So it continues. And when your education life finishes, then you have to work. And again, you face the same challenges to be able to get a job, regardless of your skills, how talentful you are. And then you have to continue to do the same thing to be able to maintain your job. So it is a kind of part of a day-to-day life in Turkmenistan.
That's going to have to do it for this edition of Global Journalist, a production of the Missouri School of Journalism and KBIA, Mid-Missouri Public Radio. Many thanks to Victoria Clement, Mohammed Tahir, Stephen Sable, and Luca Anceschi for joining us. Our producers this week are Jinhong Chen and Rachel Foster Gimble. Our visual editor is Alyssa Blyle, with multimedia production from Lily Cusack and Jonah McCown. Our audio engineer is Pat Akers, and our director is Travis McMillan. I'm Jason McClure. Thanks again for joining us. We'll leave you with a recent clip of President Berdimuhamedov on the campaign trail. He's playing his guitar and singing a song he wrote called Forward My Motherland, Turkmenistan. Senin kamil ısın doğru yer yürüme.